Welcome to another episode of the Blue Crew, a New York Rangers podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm your host, Johnny Lazarus, joined by my good friends, Cody Frankel and Avery Zaretsky. We got a really fun episode today with Mike Rupp. We talked to him for like an hour and 15 minutes, laughed our asses off with him, and heard a lot of great stories. So hope you guys will enjoy that one. But before we get into that, just say what up, guys. I don't know. My voice seems a little weird right now. I don't know if you guys are hearing that.
Yeah, dude. It seems like you have after party voice. What's up, boys?
Just ready to get rocking. Rupper was unbelievable. Yeah. I actually enjoyed his presence a lot, and he brought in a lot of things that I haven't heard from him before. Like, I've listened to a lot of podcasts with him on. Obviously, you see him on TV, but he told us some pretty personal stories that were awesome, and you guys are really going to enjoy it.
Isn't it really funny, too, when you, like, you know, Rupper's not a guy we grew up watching talk on TV, but, like, you listen to him now on NHL Network and whatnot, and when, you know, you watch these people and you hear them, like, I guess speak in more of a professional manner than you have them like face to face, one on one, just shooting the shit. It kind of like hits you by surprise, I think, the first time you hear it. Like I remember I was talking to Pierre like off air and he dropped an F bomb and I was like, whoa, like I've been listening to Pierre Maguire my whole life and I've never heard him curse. And like just hearing that come out, like it was crazy.
Dude,
I don't know if you guys felt that.
Pierre is like my favorite person. I want to like hug him.
He's the best.
I want him to be my second dad, honestly. Yeah.
He's good shit. But yeah, I mean, you guys got anything you want to bring up before we go into this interview with Rupper? I mean, there's not much Ranger news right now. We can talk about like Lafreniere and Miller. They haven't signed yet. The Tarasenko rumors and, you know, Kane stuff, but not much happening right now.
Yeah. The only thing I want to say is I'm very ready for hockey and football to come back because baseball is making me want to just put my head through a wall.
I haven't watched one baseball game. So
dude, and don't start. The Mets are horrible. The Yankees are like somehow have a winning record and it wouldn't like, if this was any other year, I would think they're a 30-win team right now because they're playing like a bunch of bozos. I mean, I'm pumped for football. The Jets are going to be really good. The Giants are going to be really good. It's going to be a good time in New York.
Wimbledon's solid. You watching Wimbledon at all?
No, I haven't been watching Wimbledon at all.
I like
actually.
Tennis. Tennis is nice.
I like tennis too, actually. I went to the U.S. Open once. It was awesome. It was a great time.
We're going to get off topic.
Dude, I got to see Djokovic, and it was sick.
See who?
Djokovic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
he sounded like you said Djokovic, but
Djokovic, what?
It sounded like you said Djokovic.
Djokovic.
Yeah, it's Djokovic. I like the guy, Alcaraz.
Yeah, he's a beast.
Oh, dude,
that
he's
guy's sick.
He's like the next thing. He's like 19, 20 years old. He's already won like three or four major Grand Slams and shit.
Yeah. No, tennis is really cool when like you play, you try to play it yourself, and you really appreciate how good they have to be to like hit the ball that hard. But way off topic.
Do you guys like pickleball?
Love pickleball.
Dude. Pickleball is great. Fire. Pickleball is for us. Like pickleball is for the bad tennis guys.
Yeah. But like you play pickleball because you want to get exercise, but like you're not really running, but you're kind of moving. And it's like that perfect balance between like, oh, that was a workout. And like, oh, I didn't really do anything.
Dude, I love pickleball. I actually love tennis too.
The only thing about pickleball that I hate is that it's kind of like ruined gyms. Like now, like every gym that has a basketball court in it is always pickleball now.
Yeah, that is true.
Pickleball is so fun.
Avery just goes to so many gyms.
Yeah.
Works out.
I do. I do. Mm-hmm.
Fucking beast.
Yeah. Beast mode. All right. Yeah, no, let's get off this.
All right. I want to talk about our RFAs we don't have signed yet. Obviously, Keandre and Lafreniere. I think Keandre is probably going to be a done deal sooner or later. Lafreniere is a tricky one, and I don't know how you guys feel, but right now we have $6.9 million in cap. So, you know, Keandre,
nice.
I think the Bo and Byram is probably as on point as it's going to get for Keandre. So that was 3.85. So I think Key will come in a little higher, around like 4. So you have 2.9 to sign Lafreniere, and they're not going to use all of it. So I'm thinking like 2.25 to 2.5 for Laf, you know, 2-year deal.
I'd really like to see them lock up Keandre to at least a 4x4.
It's not going to happen. I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think they need to, for sure. But I'm telling you, it's going to be 2 years. I just know it. And then it's going to cause a mess in 2 years.
But I don't know. Cause I always thought the same thing with Igor, and then they got him on pretty good term. They got him on a 5-year deal. So who knows where Keandre's head at is with that. And I obviously think that he knows that if he has a big breakout year, he'll be worth a lot more in 2 years. But
also the cap goes up, I think, after this season too. So.
Yeah, you see a lot of guys signing 1-year deals because they know after this season, it's going to be big for them.
Well, that was the hope with like getting Tarasenko or Kane back, but we just don't have the money. I mean, Kane's possible with the LTIR and all that jazz, but all right, anyways, back to Lof. So like, do you guys think Lock 2 years, or you think maybe they'll sign him to a 1 year prove it deal?
You got to think 2 years with.
Yeah,
Lock.
I would think.
Like he's,
I'm afraid
he's an RFA. Year. He's like an organizational guy.
New
like,
coaching yeah. staff yeah. also.
Yeah, I'm very afraid that if they signed him to a 1 year, he could like finally have a decent year and just request a trade and leave.
Could it not just be the same exact contract that Kako signed last year?
I could see that.
Yeah, but Lof, like in his contract year, essentially had a better year than Kako did, even though it wasn't a great year. Like Kako had like 27 points or something when they locked him up. You know, so I don't know. I mean, that's the only business they have left. Like I don't think, unfortunately, I don't think they have a shot in hell to get Tarasenko. I was optimistic at one point, but it looks like Gaudreau is not going anywhere, and I don't see why they'd move him at this point.
That was my next thing. I wonder. Yeah. It's been pretty quiet. I was just wondering, like, where their heads are at with like Gaudreau and that whole saga, because he is making a lot of money, and if you move that money, it helps you sign other guys. I just wonder, because it's been so quiet, where they're thinking.
Yeah, I can't imagine they move him at this point. I mean, I've been wrong many times in my life, and this might be one of them. But I just don't think. You know, they're going to move him. And I was actually talking with a buddy the other day and I was thinking about it. And like, I hate to say it, and I know we've said it many times, but like, and it's not going to happen. But dude, if they just like found a way to move Trouba, it would solve all their problems. It would solve literally all their, it's never happening, but it would solve literally all their problems. Unfortunately. Let's hear the Johnny bureaucratic answer. Here we go.
No, it's just not even really a discussion like worth having.
I know. Like, I know. I was just thinking about it and I was just like, damn.
I also, you know, listen, I know there's a lot of people who don't love Trouba, but like, did last year not show what kind of leader he is?
Dude,
like,
there's no question about it. He's a leader, but it doesn't mean he can't be a leader at like a $5 million pace. You know what I mean? I wish it was like the NFL where you could just restructure guys' contracts like midway. Like, Trouba probably would have agreed to like a $5 million deal, and then we'd be, you know, we'd probably have Tarasenko on our team.
Isn't it so crazy?
I don't know if he would have.
Yeah. Isn't it so crazy that we're like, isn't it so crazy that we're like penny pinching with like $8 million? You see those guys in the NBA making like $200 million and they're just bench guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's honestly fucking ridiculous. It's
going back on Trouba, like, was that a crazy deal at the time? I don't know.
No, I mean, dude, he came off. It was a gamble. It was a pure risk. He came off a 50-point season. He had the best season he's had for Winnipeg. And
$8 million a year for a 50-point guy, though, is pretty crazy.
Sure. But they thought, like, they were like, oh my god, this guy was as locked down as it gets. Like, he's gonna be the next fucking big thing. And then, you know, he comes here, gets traded, and declines like Brady Shea. And you know,
Also got to think about it too. Like, Trouba was a little bit more offensive before getting here, but then you have the emergence of Fox, and like, you know, D'Angelo was putting up points when he was here in that first year, first 2 years. Like, there wasn't pressure on Trouba to really be that, you know, point scoring defenseman. He's been more of a lockdown guy because he hasn't had to put up any numbers. Like, you know, he doesn't really have much business running a power play. And, you know, I know he's had some chances running the second unit, but I don't think he'll run it this year. You know, with Gustafson being acquired and Zach Jones maybe being in the lineup and even Keandre getting a shot. But listen, like, you know, the same thing with Panarin. We all thought it was a great deal getting Panarin, and
it could have been worse, man. They could have gave him the Seth Jones deal. Then we would have been real fucked. So
listen, I think these are still guys that you still want to have on your team, right?
Sure. Like, sure. There's of course you want to have Trouba on your team. He's the captain. He sets the tone on certain games. Like, you know, his hits or his fucking like,
they're bad contracts.
Sure. And I don't think it's like, he's not like a $3 million defenseman. He's like a $5 million defenseman. It's just the fact that right now we look at it and we're like, oh my God, because nobody could predict COVID. So nobody knew the cap was going to stop and freeze time and stuff like that. So we assumed, like, you know, inflation, all that jazz was going to happen, and it'd be fine. It wouldn't be that big of a deal. We probably would have like $3-4 million right now, but we're literally penny pinching $400K. So it's crazy.
Is Mark Messier the last captain for the Rangers to retire with the Rangers? I feel like we've traded every other captain.
Callahan, McDonough. I mean, Leach was captain, but he went to the Bruins for like 20 games.
Yeah, I don't even. Jágr left.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's the last one.
I think Drury retired a Ranger, did he not?
That's a good question.
I think he did.
Did he retire a Ranger?
Pretty sure he did. Because he played like a couple games in that last season because he was hurt most of it. And
you're right. He did. No, he did. He did. He did. Wow. He did retire a Ranger.
Yeah. I think it was
big
Drury.
Pull. That'd be a good trivia question.
Yeah.
That would be.
But I feel like we shouldn't talk so much more. We have such a long time with Rupper. Do you guys have anything that you do want to bring up?
No, I think since we recorded last, there really has not been much. It's been very, very quiet.
Like in the NHL at all.
Which causes you to speculate, and I hate speculating. I'm like the biggest.
And now it's like, you know, development camps are happening and they're done. And then there's kind of, you know, not much to talk about until training camp starts. So this is like the dead time in the summer.
I want to say one last thing, and then we can kick it to Rupper. I wanted to talk real quick about like Hoffman and Cooley. Like, what do you guys think in terms of like their shots at actually making the roster, given now we have all this depth?
I think Cooley has a better shot than Hoffman. Hoffman could maybe play a couple games this year, but I think it's more beneficial for him to play in the AHL.
And is your reasoning for that because Cooley's probably going to be a fourth line guy, and it's like Hoffman has the pressure to be top nine, obviously.
Yeah. It's the same thing as, you know, putting Lafreniere and Kako on the third line. Like, just, you know, maybe let Hoffman play a little bit of pro before you throw him in a situation like that. Like, Hoffman hasn't played any pro hockey. He's played a couple preseason games, but, you know, that's really it. So let him, you know, maybe even let him tear up the AHL if he can play like the first 20 games and put up some numbers, like then call him up. Like, there's no harm in letting him start there and calling him up after. But if you start him in the NHL and like his confidence doesn't really, you know, adjust right away.
I think it's a cap thing. There's a cap thing then, because if they start in the AHL and then get called up, it's 1.7 against the cap as opposed to 8.75. So that's a big difference. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
For us. Mm. Yeah.
Look at Cody with the numbers. Yeah.
Cody's numbers guy.
That was good.
But, all right. That's all I got.
Yeah. But before we do go into Rupper, I want to talk about one of our sponsors on today's show, and that is 4Play Social, which is not necessarily a dating app, but it's more of a social app. It allows you and your friend to create your own profile together and match with other sets of two and go on little fun activities. So you can go to a Ranger game, you know, as a little double date. You can go to the circus, to the museum, to the carnival, anything you want to do in the summer. 4Play Social is just a great thing that allows you to be more social and put yourself out there with another person, because sometimes scrolling on these dating apps by yourself can get a little boring. This one allows you to be a little bit more creative and create that profile with your friends. So this actually begs the question, if you were to go on a double date with any player on the New York Rangers right now, who would you guys pick?
You know,
what would you do? And what would you do?
I've thought about it, and I know he just got married, but I think I'd want to go with Adam Fox. He just seems like a cool, chill dude.
Not
and
married
you know,
yet,
you know,
engaged, not married yet.
Yes, but I think Foxy would be the one. I think I'd love to just pick his brain a little bit. He's got
not your dates. Just
you
his.
Talk Hoffman. On the date.
Yep. Yeah. I would literally just ignore the dates, and I would just talk to Foxy and pick his brain about his hockey IQ, because I just don't understand how he makes certain plays on the fly. But I think it would be a great opportunity for him and his fiance and me and another woman to go on a date.
Well, where would you go?
Carbone.
Okay, fancy ass.
I like Carbone.
All right. Cody, what would you do?
So I'm inclined to say Panarin because, you know, that's my guy. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually going to go Keandre Miller because his style is insane. He's a stud. And I think he's just like a bro. And where would I go? And Payon. Duh.
Where?
And Payon. Best What's Mexican that? Place in New York City. You should try it. It'll change your life.
All right. Well, I'll change it up. I would go. That does sound pretty nice. I'd obviously pick Lafreniere, and I would go mini golfing.
Obviously, why is that obvious?
Because he's my favorite. He's the best. I think mini golfing.
Got great strides.
Mini golfing is a good double
date. Best skater in the league, baby.
Yeah. Is mini golfing a good double date?
Mini golfing is a good double date.
And actually, I love your name drop of carnival, dude. Like carnivals. Remember back in the day in like high school, those were the thing. You'd like.
Oh my god, the high school carnival was like where
it was like legendary.
Went down.
It was like legendary. Like kiss on the Ferris wheel, all that stuff.
You did that? You kissed on the Ferris wheel?
Of course, bro.
I actually, you know, I it's funny. I said like Carbone, but I was just like thinking of restaurants. I would actually go to like Six Flags or something like that. Like
you don't
like
think very outside the box.
Oh, I thought we were just doing restaurants.
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's a good one. I mean, I'd take him to a Ranger game.
Wow. Good pick, Cody. Like no, that? I actually, but this app is awesome. Like you think about like a lot of people who are like nervous to go on dates, like just by yourself. And a lot of like girls have girlfriends who are also single. And it would just be a perfect thing where they could bring one of their friends in, and then you could bring one of your friends in. Who knows?
Yeah. Exactly. Bring each other.
With foreplay, bring your best game to the date with foreplay, where you and your single buddies can team up, make a shared profile, and go out with other pairs of single friends. Or if the girls want to go out, you guys can make a profile and match with Avery and I. Who knows? We're probably going to make one, I think, down the line here, because we're both out here just looking for love. But if you want to sign up for foreplay, there's going to be a link in the description for the episode. So click on the episode, scroll down, and then you'll see the link. You can sign up there. But yeah, go try foreplay and have a good time, because it's a lot of fun. But with that being said, let's send it over to Mike Rupp. Hope you guys enjoy it. On today's episode of the Blue Crew, we are very happy to welcome on a studio and color analyst for the NHL Network, a 2003 Stanley Cup champion, and a New York Ranger for two seasons, an NHL legend. And, he's all over TV, all over everything. So welcome to the show, Mike Rupp. Rupper, what's going on? How you doing?
I'm good, fellas. Thanks for having me on. Glad to be on here. And big Ranger guy. So I like to talk some Rangers hockey. So glad to be on here.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because as soon as I asked you for your email address to set this whole thing up, you responded with ftheflyer71@gmail.com. And I thought you were dead serious. I was like, I'm about to send that like the link.
Yeah, I was just messing around. I'm like, fuck it, I'll just throw it out there. And I did it. I was like, I met you a couple times now, and I'm getting to know you a little bit more. I'm like, I'm pretty sure he knows I'm joking with that, but I'm like, next thing you know, I won't get the damn link. So I was like, no, just kidding. Here's my actual email. But that's something that it was always easy for me in my career to hate the Flyers from every team I played on, and I played for pretty much every team in what is now the Metro Division. So that was one team I did not. And so I could see why you'd buy that.
Oh yeah. That Jody Shelley clip lives on forever, huh?
That was a tough one. I mean, HBO, 24/7 was following us around for the Winter Classic. And I played with Jody. I was on the line with Jody in Columbus. And, these are kind of all these stories work like that, right? Like those guys that you see on the ice, maybe as a fan, or just players that you don't like playing against, they're always the best teammates. Like Jody Shelley was legit one of the best dudes I met in hockey. Like he's such a great human. And, he was on the other team. And so we kind of get in that situation there. And
you're looking for a fight? You're looking for a fight?
This is Jody.
Hey,
are you looking for
you're
one?
Fucking you're irrelevant one? Out here. You're what's fucking irrelevant out here. If you had any outcome on the game, I'd fucking go you.
You don't. You don't.
Going after the 22-year-old rougher?
Hey?
Going after the 22-year-old?
He's acting like a fucking idiot.
I remember after the game, we got done, and I was at MSG. I'm in the locker room. We have the HBO kind of the crew that we really got friendly with over that time. And I went to the one producer and I said, hey man, I said something. I'm like, I said something to one of my teammates, my former teammates. I'm like, can you maybe not use that? He goes, oh yeah, I don't know what you're talking about right now, but I'll check with my guy. And he went and he came back. He's like, we got to fucking use it, dude. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, come on. And he goes, honestly, dude, the guy's like, we got to use it. So I'm like, we kind of like signed off on that. So, I've talked to Jody since, and whatever, he doesn't care. I don't even think he cares. Like, no. It's just the heat of the moment. And I've had a lot worse things probably said to me. So it's all good.
I would love to know a little bit about what was the pure emotions like winning a cup as a rookie, and, how much can you truly appreciate either rookies or, teams winning a cup today, knowing that you may never have another chance at it?
It's tough. I mean, it's something that you don't really enjoy. So hold on a second. You enjoy winning the cup. Don't
worry. Yeah.
Like, you enjoy winning the cup. That summer was incredible, especially as a young player. But like, I'm still trying coming out of that year. I mean, I played probably 26 games in the regular season, and then only played 4 games in the playoffs. And those 4 games were games 4, 5, 6, and 7 of the finals, right? So I had 30 games under my belt. And so I'm still trying to be a regular, right? So it's not like I can kick back that summer and relax and just be on on the boat and got the cup and just, I'm like, I'm still trying to survive and stay in the league, right? So, and I was that type of player it probably took me another 3 years to be established as like a full-time NHLer that I was going to stay in the NHL for a while. And then And then you're kind of always looking over your shoulder and evolving your game because you don't want to be left behind when the game's kind of moving on. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to play a long career, but I never sat back and was really enjoyed that cup, to be honest with you, until I was done playing. And, you know, now it's like I have all my stuff that I started digging out. I just moved into a new place here, and I was like kind of putting stuff in an office, and I just stuff I haven't seen. I got like the game seven sticks behind the camera here. It's like all these things. I'm like, oh man, this is really cool. Like kind of looking and soaking it in, but I didn't really get to do it at that moment. So when I watch some of these other guys, and that's all part of it too. Like we won in 03, you know, the Devils won in 2000 and in 95. So in that 8 year span, they won three cups. They lost the 1 year to Colorado. Mm-hmm. What was that, 2001?
Yeah,
and, yeah. So, I mean, I might even be getting some of this wrong because that was before I was even there.
No, that was right.
They had four Stanley Cup finals in 8 years. So I'm sitting there thinking to myself, well, shit, if I just stay here for 10 years with this organization, with the goaltender we had and the crew that we had there, I'm like, I'll be back about three, four, five finals. And it took me all the way till, you know, another 9 years in 2012 was the next furthest I ever gotten. That was with the Rangers when we lost to the Devils in the Eastern Conference Finals. So when I see guys do it now, these young players, it's like, enjoy it, man. But I used to always get sick of people being like, at that time, it was Adam Oates that didn't win yet. Like he was on Anaheim when we were playing the Ducks. And it was like, well, Adam Oates has played 20 years and hasn't won a cup. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but in my mind, I'm like, I don't give a shit. Yeah. Like this is I might never get it back here again. Right. Like, yeah. And you know, and you got to kind of take advantage of those moments because it's hard, man. It's so hard. I have so many buddies in the league, even still, that they haven't gotten the chance. They haven't gotten past the second round or they haven't made it to a final. So it's something you got to take advantage of. And you don't know if it's ever going to come back again.
Robert, you couldn't have teed it up any better for me talking about the Hudson River rivalry. You played on both sides, but that game four that really turned around the rivalry. I mean, we obviously saw the Rangers play the Devils this year and it became a rivalry once again, but I felt like across my lifetime that the rivalries fluctuated. You know, the Rangers have been really good, Devils haven't been really good, but that 2012 series, that really changed everything for me. I was in high school. I'm from New Jersey. All my friends are Devils fans. When you push Marty Brodeur, a guy you played with, what happened there?
I really struggled with, I'll give you the short end of it. I played 2 years. So I was in Jersey for a second tenure, right? Yeah. So I was with the Devils. We won the cup. I got traded to the Coyotes, played for the Blue Jackets. I had some health issues that I then kind of had to revitalize my career. I was on like a two-way deal coming back to the Devils where, you know, I had to kind of reestablish myself. So I had some years in New Jersey where that's where I had to start picking up more physicality, right? I had to start playing a little meaner, a little bigger, and maybe in a way that I wasn't necessarily used to playing. But I had to do that to be different and to stay in the league. So I had those years. And then I got an opportunity to go to Pittsburgh as the first time being UFA. And the selling point there was, hey, you're going to play on the fourth line here, but you're gonna play the way we work. And this is coming from Ray Shiro in Pittsburgh GM was, we've got Crosby, Malkin, Staal. And we generally just roll those three centers through any variation at the fourth line. So he's like, you're going to play probably 4 or 5 minutes on the fourth line, but you're going to get another 5 minutes with one of those centermen any given night. So I was like, oh, let's do it. Because I knew I had a little more offense than maybe I was given the chance in New Jersey. So I had a great year, 2 years there in Pittsburgh. And then I was a UFA again. And it was kind of the perfect storm because all my comparables, like my biggest comparable was probably Chris Neal. And as far as like guys who got double digit goals and guys who would have, you know, 15 plus fights or 100 penalty minutes or whatever the situation was, or 130 hits or whatever these categories were, there wasn't many guys that were kind of in that realm. And it was like me, Chris Neal, and I think there's someone else, Chris Neal and whoever the other guy was, re-signed with the respective clubs. So it was kind of like the perfect storm for me where I became this a much smaller free agent acquisition than Brad Richards and some of these big names. But yeah, for the job that I did, there wasn't, you know, it wasn't a lot of comps for me.
Yeah.
So the reason why I say that is I had a lot of offers on that, on that July 1st. I remember my agent was like, it was cool because I was never in that position. I had 18 teams contacting on July 1st. And I was like, holy shit. So we were able to narrow it down to, we got it down to Chicago. It was Chicago, the Rangers, and Colorado. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, man, to go to the Rangers, I don't know if I could do that. Like, I don't, like, I still got buddies on the Devils. Like, I was groomed to hate the Rangers. But I also knew I played against the Rangers the last number of years, and I knew where they were going. And they were under Torts at that time, and they played hard. And I'm like, this is a team I think that's going in the right direction. I heard and had some idea that Brad Richards was potentially going to sign there. So I'm like, I think this team's heading in the right direction. So I signed with New York, and I really put a lot of pressure on myself to make sure that my new teammates knew there was no tickle fest going on in warmups with the other boys. I wasn't going to go and, you know, have lunch. And I remember I called. It's funny. I signed with them, and I wanted to live in Jersey. I ended up living in Bergen County, and I was familiar with that area. And so I was like, maybe I should run this by Torts. I remember I called Torts, and this is just a me overthinking everything, man. Yeah. You know, I just wanted to make sure, because I didn't want him to think that I was broing out with my Devils teammates, and then I was coming to play for the Rangers. Like, that just didn't sit well with me. So I called him. I'm like, hey, Torts. I'm like, you know, I'm looking for a place. I'm looking in Jersey. I'd be the only guy on the team in Jersey. Everybody else was either in the city or up in Westchester. And I'm like, I just want to make sure you're okay with that. And he cuts me off. He goes, I don't give a shit where you live. Just come and play and battle with us. That's all I care about. I'm like, all right, cool. So I then overemphasize that all the time. Like, mm-hmm. every time that year that we played against the Devils, if you remember, I mean, we had the line brawl was on in March. I think the time before that, there was another time where I think it was me, Jansen, Prust, Bolton fought at the same time, one of the other games. Yep. And then I think there was another game prior to that opening face-off where I think it was Jansen and I fought to open a game. So it was happening all season long. And so there was kind of that stuff going on. And I remember in that series, like the way that season went, if you recall, in 2012, we were up for the President's Trophy with Vancouver all season long. And we kind of fell off a little bit in the last couple of weeks of the season and lost that President's Trophy run, which really we weren't caring about that much.
Yeah.
But we just kind of were running out of steam. In the playoffs there, we end up playing, you know, Ottawa in the first round. We should have shellacked them. We went 7 games. We played against Washington, always had good battles against them. We were such a superior team to them. We went 7 games. So, like, it was a struggle to get by those two teams. And that's the thing that always drives me nuts. And my buddies that were on New Jersey, I talked to them, like, you guys were so lucky. So on Devils fans are like, oh, 2012 was a great. I'm like, you guys were so lucky that year. Like, for 7 months or 6 months, we were such a better team. And this is the how cruel the NHL is. And all that matters is they were the better team for those 2 weeks, right? Yeah. Or 10 days, yeah. Or whatever it was. And, man, we were hitting a buzzsaw. So that's my really roundabout way where we were in the locker room and we had nothing, dude. Like, the series felt like we were quiet in the room. We're trying to manufacture some energy. And in that game particularly, I remember whatever it was, that right before pushing, shoving Marty, they scored. I think maybe they went up 3 goals or whatever in the game. The game was over.
It was a blowout, yeah.
Yeah, and we went out for a faceoff. And I remember thinking to myself, all right, we're losing this game. This isn't heading in the right direction. I got to stir something up. I got to get some emotion going. So I lined up with Steve Bernier, and I was kind of, you know, messing with him, and he wasn't, you know, kind of doing anything. And the puck gets, you know, dumped in. I go behind the net and I hit Harold. And I remember I hit him, and it was a clean hit. I hit him pretty hard. And I got pissed because I think the refs knew I was trying to stir something up, but it was a clean hit. But then they blow the whistle and they're giving me a penalty because, you know, we see this in the playoffs. Like, they don't want it to. You know, they don't want it to get out of hand, but it wasn't a penalty what I did. So I was pissed. So I pull out my mouth guard and I start like yelling at the referee. And I'm like, and all of a sudden in that moment, I just saw Marty right next to me.
And he's just like chilling.
And I literally in my head was like, well, this'll throw gasoline on it. And I just shoved him. Right. And then kind of all hell breaks loose. And I remember going to the locker room, and it was, you know, we lost that game pretty handily. And I remember being in the room, and I was waiting for the guys because I got tossed. And I was sitting in the training room. I took basically my top gear off. I just had my bottom gear on. I was in the training room. And then the boys were coming in. It was just, I remember Danny Girardi came in. He peeks his head in the training room. He's like, just kind of like, yes. You know, and the guys are kind of like, you know, we just wanted a little bit of extra, like, F you, a little more jam. And we weren't. So did it give us a little bit of a boost? Maybe. Didn't do much in the series. We were kind of desperate. So I think I just tried to do something desperate to throw some gasoline on it. But, man, it was tough because, you know, I see Marty at golf in his golf outing. We've talked about it since. He's good with it now. But for a while there, I was like, oh, man, that guy pretty much won me a cup. And I just going and shoving him into the crossbar. But, you know, I mean, that was my role. I did it for his team. I did it in New Jersey. I'm not going to give anybody free passes when you're talking about the playoffs, you know.
It was funny you mentioned like the length of the series that you guys went on. I'm 25 years old. I've seen the Rangers win in five once. It's crazy. It just seems like that's like a recurring theme.
Yeah.
No, it's true, man. It's, I don't know what it is. I think that year, you know, we were, if you recall, like we were called the Black and Blue Shirts, right? Mm-hmm. We had a very tough team that I think kind of added to that moniker, but I think it was even more so because the block shots, the Ryan Callahan, the way he would play, or Danny Girardi, Brian Boyle, you know, Prusty, like these guys. The way that Torts demanded for us to play was awesome. It gave us a chance to win every night, and we had the best goalie in hockey. And so I'm sitting there. It was great. I wouldn't change anything, but it was demanding. Like the guys who played that style, like Brandon Dubinsky, you know, Ryan Callahan. I mean, when you used to, I remember that team in particular of any team I played for in my career, like in training rooms after any game, just game 23 or game 63 or, you know, the second round of the playoffs, like the boys were banged up and it's because they played hard and he asked for us to play hard and we just ran out of gas. It's tough to sustain that shit, you know?
Yeah. So it's so funny you say that. I want to talk about like just going on a playoff run in general, but I was listening to That's Hockey Talk, I think, like, you know, during the cup final, and you talk about how you talked to Pierre or something, and Pierre's a friend of the show. He's been on here before, and you were like, or Pierre's like, yeah, I've done 11 games in like 13 days. And you're like, Pierre, we've been playing every fucking day.
Yeah.
You know, like we're dying over here. But, you know, just in general, like that 2012 run, right? You go to the conference final, you're playing probably for like 7 weeks, right? Like playoff hockey every other night. What are you doing socially? Like you're a pretty outgoing guy. Like, do you have a night to like, obviously you don't go out and get fucked up, but like, what are you doing to like take your mind off the game? Like when everything every other day is just hockey, hockey, hockey.
Honestly, it's like nothing really. I mean, cause you're off nights, you're kind of watching, especially on the road, like you're watching the other games. And, you know, I, Johnny, I know you guys probably all know that, like, you know, when you're on the road, like you've got a setup at the hotel. So they'll get like, you know, a lounge area that they'll make, and not like lounge, like bottle service lounge. Like we're talking like they'll get a room. They'll have it, you know, kind of fruit trays, healthy eating snacks,
maybe a cookie or a brownie.
Yeah. Maybe the odd cookie, brownie, ice cream at nighttime, whatever. But you know, you'll have all that stuff in there, and they'll have TV set up, and you'll have all the games on in play, especially in the first round. It's cool. It's like you're just submerged in the playoffs. And then you've got treatment tables in the room for the trainer. So it's like when you go on the road and you have your practice, even when you go out to dinner, you come back, maybe get back 8:30, you're watching the West Coast games in that room. Everyone's hanging out. Guys are playing cards. You've got a TV set up with, you know, PlayStation or Xbox, and guys are playing Call of Duty or playing golf or whatever they're doing, right? And it's literally just that nonstop. Like it's pretty much Groundhog Day, and it's a blast. There's times where you get sick of seeing each other, you know, like it's just like hanging out with your brothers all the time. And there's sometimes you get little bickerings from playing cards or video games or doing whatever you're doing. And maybe you want to go to your room one night and just be like, I'm just going to watch a movie. But it's really no social anything. Like you're just consumed. I remember in the playoffs, like, I wouldn't pay my bills. Like I just have a stack. Like the world stopped. You know what I mean? Like I wouldn't talk to friends and family outside. Not that I would choose not to. It's just like I was just so focused on playing. So it was weird. I think it's changed a little bit where when I was at the Devils, we used to stay in the hotel at home in New Jersey. So we were not at home at all. And Lou didn't want any distractions. And so that was harder. You know, when I was playing other teams in the playoffs and you had a little bit, being at home, you can at least get away a little bit more. But I loved it. I thought it was the perfect time. It's like you live in this fantasy world. Everything's just about the playoffs. Nothing else mattered.
Yeah. For me, it's just like, you know, you think about the younger guys and, you know, obviously it's so demanding mentally. Like, you know, Panarin, I'm just thinking about Panarin this year coming out saying, like, you know, his frustrations in playoffs. And when you're just wrapped in it 24/7 for, you know, as many days as you're in the playoffs, like, I got to imagine it's just so difficult to step out of that and continue to play well if you're not playing well to begin with.
Yeah, and those guys, like, it's a different animal for those guys. Like Panarin, the high-end guys, you know, we see it all the time. Like, it's not as much pressure for guys like me. Everybody has pressure because you don't want to be the reason why you lose, right? You don't want to turn that puck over, and every play is under a microscope in the playoffs. But I never had the pressure of, oh, I have to score tonight for us to win. I always thought I could be the guy to score the goal. And that allowed me to, like, you know, you just got to do all the right things. Guys like that, they have to score. Yeah, and it's hard to score in the playoffs. And that's why those guys, like, we're still seeing some superstars trying to learn. I mean, this past year's playoffs, Jason Robertson, like, he kind of struggled for a good portion of the playoffs, right? And then he finally got going, and then they end up losing in that round against Vegas. But that's not an indictment on him. Like, it's hard. And your game guys are game planning against you, and that's pretty much it. Like, when you play against the Rangers, like, you're focusing on Brett. Like, that's what you're doing, and guys are going to make your life miserable. So for me, those guys, those days where you're kind of in the hotel or you're consumed by the playoffs, I give them a ton of credit for just trying to stay positive, because they would eat me alive. I never had that type of pressure in that way. Those guys got it in a big way.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they sure do. And I want to circle back to what you were discussing before. You spoke a little bit about playing with toughness and having some FU. And, you know, in 2004, you made the decision to leave the NHL to join the Danbury Thrashers. And I talk about a team with some FU, you know, so yeah. I would love, you know, can you talk about your time a little bit there? And I would love to hear about that.
Don't spoil though, because Avery and I haven't seen it yet.
Spoil everything.
We gotta watch it.
Wait, you guys haven't watched it?
I have.
Cody has.
We have. They're the worst. They're the worst.
Wow. I mean, I don't
want to be honest. Have to be up front.
I don't want to pump the tires of the documentary that I'm in, but it's pretty sick.
I told him. I told him.
I'll watch it after this. Now
they did. Sure. They did do a really good job on it, and I'll say this first, and then I'll go back and answer your question there, Cody. Is like. So, no spoiler. I think you guys got the gist.
You get spoiler.
You guys got the gist.
The rules have been out for 3 years. We don't watch it.
Anybody else watching this has probably seen it, so I'll just be spoiling for you too.
Yeah, just go ahead. But,
so they you know, the owner of the team, Jimmy Galante, like, he ended up going away, right? And he was an unbelievable. They treated us like gold, and so I never knew. It was just kind of weird how everything ended. And it just kind of disappeared. And I used to always think, like, it was a combination of Slapshot and The Sopranos is what it felt like, you know, being during that time. And I'm like, no one, like, knew about it. So when the lockout started up again, I go back, like, it was, I don't know, never really came up. I told some of my buddies, like, a couple stories, but it never really came up. I stayed in contact with some of the guys I played with. But it was just strange. And then I remember when I was playing for the Wild, it was like my last year or two in the NHL. So it had been around probably 2014. I got a message through our PR at the Wild from ESPN Magazine. And the magazine was going to do an article on this, the Danbury Trashers. And they reached out and they said, asked if I wanted to partake in it. So our PR guy comes up to me and asked, and I said, well, can you find out if the Galante family are going to, you know, are they going to be a part of this story? And so he reached out and they said, no. And I'm like, I'm good. I've seen enough movies. I know, like, I ain't saying nothing, you know, like, there's, you know, if those guys want to tell their story, I will be glad to add some entertainment with some stories. But if they don't want to talk about it, like, I'm not going to talk about it, you know? So that it never happened. That never happened. Then this was probably, it was before pandemic. So it's probably 20, I'd say it was probably 2018 or 19. I get this email and this guy says that he's a producer from Netflix. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. Okay. And he's talking about the same thing. So I reply with the same response. Like, is the family, you know, going to partake in this? Yes, he says. I said, all right, well, I'm going to look into that and I'll let you know. So I contact AJ, who is and was at the time the 18-year-old GM of the team. And he's like, yeah, we're good. We're going to tell this story. Feel free. I'm like, all right, let's do it. It was something that took some time because the pandemic kind of slowed everything down with it being launched. I'd never thought it was going to come out. And then all of a sudden, one day, it's like debuting on Netflix in 2 weeks is this new stretch of documentary, sports documentaries that they're doing called Untold. And so anyways, my time there, it was during the lockout. I was only 24 years old. I needed a place somewhere. My son at the time was, he was a newborn. He had some health issues where it was nothing crazy, but he on occasion needed to go into the hospital for some different things. And I didn't feel comfortable going to Europe to play. And I needed to play somewhere, but I couldn't play in the American Hockey League because they would have been like crossing enemy lines and being like almost like a scab or something to play. So I was like, I didn't know where to play. I thought the season was going to start. And when it was canceled in whatever it was, January, I had nowhere to go and didn't know what to do. And I had, so I was buddies with, I don't know if you guys remember the names, Chris and Peter Ferraro. The twins. Yeah. So I knew them really well. And they reached out to me and they said, hey, we got in contact. There's a guy that's starting. I guess it's United Hockey League. He's starting up a team. I think it's their inaugural season. And he wants to win the championship. And he's trying to find NHL players to come and play. You want to talk to him? And it sounded kind of weird at first. But yeah, I'll talk to anybody. So I talked to him, Jimmy Galante, on the phone. He's telling me the story. And he's basically like, you know, my son was a big hockey fan. He's a Devils fan. He got his knee blown out, couldn't play hockey anymore. And he's passionate about it. So I bought him a team. I'm like, okay. Yeah. And so he's like, do you want to come in and play and all that stuff? And so, yeah, I mean, I remember the one thing I said to him, and this was kind of the first sign that it was going to be a little different. As I said, I go, hey, here's my one concern. I said, I played in the minors for 2.5 years in the American Hockey League. And you guys know how this goes. Like, if somebody gets sent down from the NHL, no matter what kind of player you are, it's a challenge for everybody. Not just like physically, like to be challenged to fight. Like, I want to attack that person with the puck. I want to beat him. Like, if I can beat him, that guy played in the show. So it'll look good at me if, you know, I'm going to challenge that person. I'm going to get in his face. I'm going to finish my checks on him, all that stuff. And I said, so if I'm coming there to play during the lockout, I ain't going to be fighting. Like, I'm playing to, you know, get my legs moving, whatever. And I go, don't get me wrong. If I have to fight, I'll fight. I have no concerns with fighting, but I'm not coming there and just fending off all these guys that want to prove that they can make it to the next level.
Yeah.
And he goes, I won't do my Italian voice. I can't really do
it. No, you got to do it for us.
He kind of goes, Michael, when you get off this phone, I'd like for you to go on the internet and look at our roster. Let's just say nobody will even look at you. And I'm like, what's this guy mean? So I'm like, all right, well, let me think about it. I'll look at, you know, do some digging, whatever. I get off the phone. I go on the internet, go on the computer, and I start looking up the roster. And this is I don't even know how many games they played, but it's, I mean, they're probably 70% through the season at this point. Dude, they had like four guys. They had like four or five guys with over 200 minutes in penalties, like 250 minutes, like 300 minutes. And I start seeing these guys. And I know some of these names through like the underground fighting stuff in like pro hockey. Like, you know, I always heard it was almost like these mythical creatures like Frank the Animal by Lois. Like, you know, there was John Nasty Morasty. And I'm like, all these guys had like one of those nicknames, like, you know, between their first and last name. And that's when you know you're fucking tough, right?
Like, what was yours?
Like that. What's that?
What was yours?
I didn't have one. I wasn't that tough. And these guys were like, so these guys were, and we had Roman, the Nigerian Nightmare Nader. Remember, he played for the Rangers for a little bit.
Yeah.
You can go on and on with this and these names. And I'm like, he ain't serious. Or he's serious. Like, these guys, no one's going to. And so what ends up happening, like playing there, and you'll see in the documentary, it's like, this guy treated everybody so good, and that he wanted a tough team. He wanted to intimidate. And we had a really good team too, like that could put the puck in the net. That we had probably 8 legitimate heavyweights, right? Like, they would fight anybody and probably beat anybody. And we'd play against other teams. And, you know, this wasn't the 70s. This is 2004. Like, the game was a little bit different. And every team then in the United Hockey League had, like, a fighter. And we'd be in warm-ups. I remember this one incident where a guy that used to terrorize me when I was in the OHL. I grew up in Cleveland. I played high school hockey, went right into the Ontario Hockey League. I got dropped into fighting. No idea what I was doing. And this guy would chase me around all the time. And I was, like, always a point getter in the States. And I went up there, and it's like I was just getting challenged to fight every game. And this guy would just never leave me alone. I played in his division, whatever. And I never fought him. I was intimidated by him. And so you fast forward. Now we're out in warm-ups. And this guy's on the other team. He's the tough guy on their team. And in warm-ups, I get down at the red line. I start doing, like, a grind stretch, like, you know, on the ice. And I look over at him. And I don't want to say his name, but I'm like, hey, what's up, man? And he won't even look at me. And I'm like, hey, look at me. Like, remember what you used to do to me in the OHL? And, like, literally over my shoulders, like, 6 guys that are dying to fight because they know they want to stay there and get treated well and play in Danbury. And it's like a piece of meat when it's one tough guy on the other team. But guys literally wouldn't look at me. I didn't have to fight anybody. I didn't have to hit anybody because there's a lineup of guys that were just nuts. I mean, it was a crazy experience. The documentary does a hell of a job, but I mean, there's even more stories from those years there.
Well, I feel like I don't have to watch it now.
Yeah, I'm locked in now. Absolutely. That could have just been the trailer for the documentary. It's on its own.
Yeah, no, it was. It was. You know, I remember just some of the stuff was like one time where it's not in the documentary. Jimmy Galante, the father, came up to me and he goes, "Michael, what do you know about Donald Brashear?" And I'm like, what would you like to know? I'm like, he's tough as nails. Like, he's one of the scariest guys in the NHL. He goes, he's thinking about coming here to play. And I go, really? I'm like, okay. And I'm like, he can play too. He's got, you know, just like anybody else. If you play in the NHL, like most people play in the NHL, have scored 50 goals at different levels that they played at. Like, even though you see a guy, you're like, well, that guy's not very good. Well, I mean, to get to where he is. Yeah, he is. Like, Donald Brashear had a pretty nice hands. Like, he had some good hands. So I said to Jimmy, I'm like, he would be definitely one of our best players. And, you know, but I'm like, what do you want him? Like, do you want him to fight? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, Jimmy, and all due respect, I mean, you do, this is your team. You do what you want to do. I'd love to have him here. No one's going to fight Donald Brashear. They're not even going to be able to get to him. If you've got a locker room full of guys drooling to go out there and fight. And I remember he said something on the lines. Well, I don't remember what the number was, but he goes, I don't know if I can get it done, but he's asking $500,000 to come here. And that was like with a couple weeks left in the season. I'm like, he wants $500,000 to come here for like the end of the season. And he's like, yeah, I'm thinking about it, but I'm not too sure. Like, so he ended up not doing it, but he was nuts, man. He wanted to win. He'd do whatever it took.
It's funny you mentioned fighting, and now in the NHL, it kind of seems like it's dying down a bit. There's a dying age of like the fighter and like the true fighter that teams would just bring in literally just to set the tempo with fights. Who's a guy still in the NHL that you would maybe second guess fighting when you were in like your prime right now?
Oh, man. It's hard to say because it's been changing. Like, when I came in, there was in the NHL, there's a lot of guys that, you know, I mentioned before, I had to learn how to fight and kind of take this progression that I was having in my head of, all right, now I'm ready to fight these types of guys. Then one of my first, like, heavyweights to fight was like Colton Moore. And I fought Colton Moore and I did pretty good. And I was like, okay, so now I'm a little more confident here. And I kept kind of chipping away at it. But the older I got in the league, there's more of those guys weren't there. And then I could look around. By the time I was playing with the Rangers and the Minnesota Wild, I'm not trying to sound like, you know, Tommy Duff guy, but I was like, I wasn't afraid of anybody. Like, I'm like, no one's going to touch me. You kidding me? And I had the experience then at that time. So, you know, it's gotten to the point where, like, because Ryan Reeves, I played against Ryan Reeves when he first came in the league. And Revo wasn't always the killer he is now. Like, you know, just the same progression. Like, I've tried to fight Ryan Reeves numerous times. So as Colton Moore has too. We've talked about different guys that have tried. Revo didn't want to fight then. And I'm not calling him out on that. Like, I did the exact same thing.
That's
like,
the one clip we're taking from this.
Yeah, you're going
to
take
Rupper out. Wants to fight Revo.
Revo, I wouldn't drop the gloves with you right now, Revo. I'm too old for that nonsense. You knocked me out. I'm just saying.
John, we cut that? Like,
and I think Ryan Reeves and some of these other guys get to the point where they're like looking around, they're like, I'm the guy now. And I think Rebo's embraced that really well. And he's added so much value because he's like that alpha now. He'd be a guy that he makes you think twice, right? Curtis McDermott's really tough. And who got him this year though? Was it Reeves? No,
I don't know.
Someone got Curtis McDermott pretty good this year, but you know, he's defenseman out.
He's a big boy too.
Yeah, he's really big. There's still some guys. I mean, Tom Wilson still got that factor to him too, and he's got a little craziness. But I mean, there's still it's changed, like you're saying, Avery. Like it's different now. Like I don't think you necessarily have those guys to set a tempo. And it's funny. I was talking to someone about this the other day, and a great point was brought up because there's a lot of talk when Reeves signed in Toronto. Why would you sign him? He's 36 or whatever his age is now. You know, this is a dying breed, all these different things. I think the problem is, especially now, people pay so much attention to signing a guy like that, what it does to the opponent. And that part's changed. Like the deterrent. No, there's rules, man. This isn't the wild, wild west. Like if I'm out there and Ryan Reeves on the ice, I don't have to fight him. You know what I mean? Like maybe I'll act a little, you know, if I'm a player that doesn't fight, maybe I'll act a little more tame in my behavior, which would help Reeves' team, but you don't have to do anything. You shouldn't be afraid of him. I don't think that's a thing anymore necessarily. I think it's more of what it does for your team. You know what I mean? And like, let's not forget, even talking Rangers, Chris Kreider's 52 goals came in a season with Ryan Reeves. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, does that mean that, you know,
a direct correlation?
So Kreider's had, what, 26 of them on the power play? So you're back. Reeves has – I'm not trying to say Ryan Reeves was a big reason why. All right. I'm saying is the what it does for your team. Your team should go out there and just be a little more arrogant in the way you play. Like Toronto. Toronto has struggled up to this point to do certain things. I think Austin Matthews is world-class. No one's going to argue that. I think he's got to find another gear to push through things. I think I'm tired of seeing him just smile when things get physical. You got to push back. I love him. He was a league MVP last year. I thought he was the best player in hockey. I think right now when he gets his deal, he should be the highest paid player in hockey until Connor gets his next deal or Leon gets his next deal or whatever. But point being, he's elite. But he has to figure out, like, you got to push through certain things. And he hasn't done that yet. But with Ryan Reeves on your team, shouldn't you feel more cocky? Like you should, if you like to talk shit, you should talk even better shit now. Talk it more. You know what I mean? If you want to go out there and pretend, like I always felt like the NHL was very interesting because it's like, you can be a persona. You could be something different than what you are. You can go out there. It's like, you can, if you want to go out there and be an absolute shit bag and just stir things up, you could be the nicest dude ever off the ice. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not a fighter off the ice. When I went on the ice, I was mean, and I was able to do that because it's like you can do that, and you can kind of fake it till you make it, right? And I think it's more of like that's what guys like Ryan Reeves does. I think people so much like, oh, it's not a deterrent. Look, you know, I was on the team when Sidney Crosby got KO'd in the Winter Classic, and almost ended his career. People are like, well, you guys had, you know, Mike Rupp, Derek England, Eric Goddard. Like, it's not a deterrent. No, don't focus on that. It's what it does for your team. Like the guys should play with more. They should they should be harder to play against because they don't have to be concerned with someone coming at them. Because if someone comes at them, Big 75 is going to come over the boards and set things straight.
Sorry, I was just going to say that was a great answer, because of what a lot of people, like the analytics crowd, don't understand is the true value that these guys hold, right? You know, you can look at Ryan Reeves and say he doesn't add anything to the offense or defense, but people don't know what goes on in the locker room. People don't know what they do off the ice. Like, they do provide something. It's not like there's zero value there. So you can't just knock Toronto for what they did there.
This sounds so stupid because you can't measure this.
Yeah.
I know guys in Minnesota that are still there and were there this past year. You and you guys probably noticed it. You notice this past year when the Minnesota Wild all started just doing interviews, no shirts on? They're all losing their shirts because Revo did it. And you kind of like, you know, messed around, whatever. But this is the thing, just a little, like, you might have players on your team that are introverts that don't want to be like emotionally, like hockey's an emotional game. We need emotion, right? But, you know, some guys that are, a lot of times in hockey we see, and I think that's a problem with our sport compared to some others, we don't see players' true colors all the time. But Revo pops a shirt off. Why wouldn't you when you look like that, dude? Tattoos everywhere, big chest, whatever, big boy. And I don't know how it came into play, but something happened in that room where they're like, tarps off every time we're talking to the media. So you go, you get a star of the game, you're going out to the bench, and you're going to talk to the whatever it was. you're going to talk to the media. Shirts off, dude. That's what we're doing. We're cocky now. You're telling me that doesn't, like, do something to the group? I mean, it makes guys step out of their comfort zone. And you got to. Like, the playoffs are about the NHL playoffs are about being comfortable being uncomfortable. And so, like, it's just a small little step in that. It's stupid. You can't measure that. Oh, so you're telling me if, you know, 18 players take their shirts off, we're going to be a good team? No, it's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it just gives you this arrogance, right? Yeah. And I think that's some of the things that you can't measure that, like, a guy like Ryan Reeves brings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love, you know, I love the mention of that, because, like, even when Revo was on the Rangers, he wasn't fighting like crazy. I mean, it was just the nature of him being on the team that it gave, you know, gave the Rangers as a whole a little bit more swag and a little bit more aggression as a team. So I love that. So transitioning a little bit to the current Rangers, you know, we have a pretty good team right now, but what strides do you think this current Rangers team needs to take in order to obviously reach that ultimate goal of, you know, hoisting the next Stanley Cup?
I don't know. I feel like I really like the team. Right. Like, I like the team a lot. I feel like 2 years ago, it felt like it at the time. And it's easy to say that now because it kind of has come into fruition like this, that they're two games away from the Stanley Cup finals really set the bar high. You know, they went from like a team that's up and coming to like a team that everyone's deeming like should win. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's tough because, you know, not that they came back with this attitude of like, oh, we've arrived. I don't think that they've done that, but it's tough to take that big leap and then match it again. And it hurts even more when you lose against your biggest rival, arguably, right?
Yeah.
In the playoffs. So this
the way they did too.
Like, what's that?
The way they did also.
Yeah. It
was weak.
Didn't look good, right? Didn't feel good. The thing with them, they're great. Like, they've got a lot of things in place. I love their decor. Clearly love their goaltending. The forward group, they're kind of, I hate to say this because I don't mean it to be in a negative way. They're almost, they're captive to Lafreniere and Kako. Either it's sink or swim time.
Yeah.
Did you listen to our last episode, Rupert?
I just said that last episode.
No, I didn't listen. Did you guys say that?
Listening to our show?
That was my
I should. No,
it's only fair because we didn't watch the documentary.
I'll watch it when you watch that. No, I mean, everyone's going to have their own opinions. I have no problem with their progress right now. I don't. Sure. Would you like it to be further along? Who wouldn't? Especially when you see some of the other top first and second overall picks. But they are taking strides. The problem is this team, again, arrived earlier than expected. And now all of a sudden, financially with this team and then as far as roles, this is these players, they either have to jump into those roles or they need to be put in bottom six roles that you don't want to do with those picks, and it might stunt their growth in the future. So I think that they're at the point now where I think Peter Laviolette is got you. You go with them. Like you gotta smoke this out. And either these guys are going to take it in stride and hit that next level, or you're going to realize maybe this player isn't going to be what we thought. And either way, you've got to decide one or the other, because if it's the latter, now you can pivot and do something about it. Right now, there's that unknown. I wouldn't want to trade either of them. I don't want to trade either of them. Like, you had those picks. Like, these guys could be great. And like, some of the things that they've learned, their compete for pucks. I personally love Kaapo Kakko's compete on pucks. Like, his board play, he's awesome. Like, he can do some things. And people are gonna be like, oh, that's not sexy. Like, this is a second overall pick. I want to see goals. Okay, cool. But there's a lot of second overall picks that don't know the board play. So that board play to me will give him sustainability in this league for a long time. So worst case scenario, this guy's a 15-year third liner, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, that's worst case scenario. I think he's got to be able to start tucking the puck a little bit more. He gets chances. He's like, his finishing ability is going to have to come around. You know, Laf is learning these, competing a little bit more. But when I'm watching the games or I'm at MSG and I'm seeing him hit, like, his hits you can start hearing him a little bit more, like the pop into the boards, like the pop on the players. I'm like, all right, he's figuring some of these things out. So I guess my point is, like, I like this group. They've got to first and foremost figure out what those guys are and where they're at right now. And you're going to have to play them. But then I also think to myself, not to go back to the Reeves situation, or the only problem up front that I feel like they sometimes have is when they're on, this team can snap the puck around and it's beautiful, man. Bang, 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 goal. You know, like, they could make it work. But when they're lacking some of those days of energy, they're bad. Like, there's no energy, right? Like, I want more energy guys. Like, some guys that are just, you know your job. You're going to go out there and just stir it up a little bit, you know? Don't have to fight. It's not about fighting. It's about just adding some energy into the mix. Because that's one thing that kind of gets me at times, where I watch them. When they're off, they're off. When they're on, they could beat everybody, and they will beat everybody.
Yeah, and Vlad Tarasenko's the guy with energy, right, Rupp?
you know what? That part was tough because, listen, dude, I'm not – they had two players pretty much fall into their lap and wanted to go there. I don't know many GMs that would not take that on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have Patty Kane. It's pretty much like, that's the only place I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And it didn't really cost you much to get him. Didn't really cost you much to get Vlad Tarasenko.
Yeah.
It's tough. I wish I could tell you different. I would have done the same thing. I don't know. Maybe coaching wise, I would have done something different with it. Yeah. But as far as a GM trying to put enough pieces in place, I would have done the exact same thing. But it seemed like those two players, you added talent, but you didn't add something. You had a talented team. You didn't add like a different level of something. And they need guys that are going to go out there and have that. That's why I've loved Tyler Mott's game. Like, these types of players, you need that. Dude,
he's Gretzky to Ranger fans right now. Mott's like Gretzky around here. Everyone loves him.
No, it's so true.
Yeah.
But dude, it's not like, just give me something different that the rest of the lineup doesn't do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And, you know, I'm quite frankly, the only guy left on that team I played with, I want to see more from Crides at times, dude. Like, I just want to see more energy. And
that's
more
the thing with the energy talk. I mean, in the beginning of his career, he was the most energetic guy, it seemed like, in the locker room. And now he's very monotone. You see business, it. You've seen business, a change throughout the years in his press conferences. He used to just be like the guy who would be on energy. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like a caged animal early on in his career. Now he's like, he's domesticated and he's like a household pet now. You know what I'm saying? Like, dude, I'm not trying to come down on Chris Kreider. I love Chris Kreider. Chris Kreider was literally the reason why we advanced in the playoffs in 2012 when he came in. That was his first experience in the NHL. But why did that happen? The dude came in and he just lit the world on fire, man. He was the fastest player. He was the strongest player. And he still is. He could still do those things. Like, he is probably one of the most, if not the most powerful player I've ever played with. Mm. And I think that there's times where he's too methodical. Like, just like, be that wild animal again, dude. This team needs you like that. So it's not, that's not calling out Chris Kreider. That's just knowing that he could be that difference maker. And sometimes when you're in a series, and I was thinking this during that series against the Devils too. And I know that a lot of people joke around about when he ran Carey Price, and he's gotten a few of those oops by oops on purpose runnings of goalies. I was like, you know what? Chris Kreider needs to go to the crease hard on Curtis Smead right now. Like, just go, dude, don't run. You don't have to run him. Just go there and create some chaos. No one's going to be able to touch you, you know? So I don't know. I'd like for him. I think if he can find another level with that, it's contagious, because he's a beast. This team's right there, man. Mm. And I hope they can get over the hump.
I just want to go back to what you were saying before about Lafreniere and Kako. And I think it's starting to change a little bit now in the NHL, both sides too, like fans and players. The whole loyalty in the game is shifting a little bit, like somewhat toward what the NBA is doing, players asking for, you know, out of certain situations. And, you know, part of me obviously looks at a guy like Lafreniere and Kako, you know, one overall, two overall picks that haven't necessarily been given the keys to the kingdom right now to take over as that, you know, number one, number two overall guy typically does. You see a guy like Jack Eichel ask out of a situation in Buffalo where he wasn't happy. He goes to Vegas and wins the Stanley Cup with his new team in his, you know, first full season. Do you think it almost incentivizes a guy like Lafreniere, who maybe not, you know, is in the best situation for himself, to at some point, you know, lose that loyalty and want out? Like, even fans too are starting to say, like, hey, this guy's not our guy. You know, I think the loyalty is just changing so much right now in the NHL, fans and players wise.
It's tough, because that's the other part too. And I know, hey, people may not want to hear that. Some fans might be like, dude, I'm sick of hearing that. Like, I want to see these guys provide offense or do whatever they're supposed to do where they're drafted. I've got a lot of time and patience with those two, because most of the time when a first or second overall pick comes in the league, you're going to a shit team. Mm-hmm. These guys went to a team that all of a sudden it felt like overnight was like, oh, you guys are contender now. And that's why I don't really fault Gerard Gallant that much, because they had to win right now, and those guys are still learning. So he was putting other guys in those roles, but at some point you've got to figure out what those guys are. Right. And I think that was that balance that maybe people got upset about and didn't really work out. But I don't know, man. It's because I think it's almost easier to go to a team that's garbage, because we talk about that all the time. Sure. Like, there's teams, someone's got to get the points on bad teams.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not just a guy who pops in my head.
Clayton Keller for me.
You know what's funny you said that, because I'm going to the same team. But yes, Clayton Keller's one too, where I'm very interested to see what he does. He just had 86 points this year. Let's see what he does the next year. Like, you got to follow this up now, okay? Like, you got to – but Shane Gostisbehere. So Gostisbehere was in Philly. And then that's when kind of Provorov came along, got that PP time. And then Gostisbehere – remember when Gostisbehere came in? He was like this – He drove them to the playoffs, I think, that one year, very close to the playoffs or whatever, is like a rookie. And so he goes – he kind of just wasn't getting the touches anymore on the power play. His offense wasn't there. He just kind of – just really kind of deteriorated in Philly. Goes out to Arizona, and all of a sudden it's like Shane Gostisbehere's got 56 points as defenseman, or 60 points as defenseman, or whatever. It's like revitalized his career, and I like him. But someone has to get the points. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to get power plays. You're the guy on that team, you know? And so I think that's where you get first, second overall picks a lot of times go to these places. And it's tough, but, you know, there's no teams in the NHL that are – you're not going to be held scoreless all year. Like, you're going to get points. Yeah. And so, I mean, look to – how do you evaluate, like, some of the guys even in Seattle? Seattle's a good team, but they don't really have, like, a guy. Like, Jared McCann's a 40-goal scorer. Like, do you think Jared McCann would score 40 goals if he played for the Rangers? Absolutely not. He might get 25, maybe. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. I'm not coming down on what those guys do. Like, dude, I wish I scored 25 or 40.
Yeah,
like,
you know, it's all situational.
But, yeah, it's the opportunity. And these – guys haven't gotten the opportunities that they would if Buffalo drafted them, or if Arizona drafted them, or Anaheim drafted them.
It's the price of being a Bright Lights fan in New York. Like with every team, Giants, Yankees, it's all the same. You sign, they sign the big ticket guys, they draft the big ticket guys, and they just can't perform. And then they go some rinky dink place and they end up being an MVP candidate. It's just,
you know, hey, you know who my undercover stud is on the Rangers? I'm a huge fan of. Actually, I got my Mika jersey. I like Mika.
I was just gonna ask about that.
Yeah, he's not undercover. no. So we got that jersey. It was actually really cool. So that run to the conference finals 2 years ago, I had this stretch where I kind of did a lot of my dates, because I have an allotment of dates that I fill for NHL Network. And I had this stretch of, I think it was the round against Carolina, where I was off for like a week or 10 days. And it was so cool. It was the first time I was able to like go to the game as like a fan, like a consumer of hockey. Mm-hmm. Right. And I went, and it was fucking awesome. I went, dude. I had a Rangers hat down on my face.
You down in beers or no?
What's that?
Were you down in beers?
Oh, crushing them. Yeah. It was awesome. it was the best. Like I went as like, you know, my girlfriend and I went, she's a big Rangers fan, and we went, and it's like just fans. And it was funny, because I got tickets and I was sitting up with like some of the other alumni, and you know, like a lot of the Rangers alumni, when they're at the games, they're wearing suits, and like, you know, I've got Steph Matteau and like, you know, Colt Moore and all these guys around there. Like, but I'm like, I told when they left me tickets, I go, hey, I'll do any other games or whatever. Like, if you want me to go and meet and greets and do things like that, I'll do it. But these couple games, like I want to consume it, right? Literally. And we went there and just had some beers, and it was, that was against Carolina, and the games were incredible. They won. And I got that fever, like, dude, I've never seen that. Think about it though, in my life, like I was either on the ice or like, I haven't rooted for a team. I haven't had that opportunity. I never did before I played in the NHL. I was a kid and from Cleveland. Like, there's no teams. I didn't go playoff hockey. This is the first time I was like experienced it, and I was all about it. So that, you know, we grabbed a Mika jersey. Still got to get the thing signed. And then my sleeper guy is Braden Schneider. I love him, dude. And this is the thing. I don't know where things are going to go with Ryan Lindgren after this year. He's going to get paid. He has to get paid, and he means so much to this team. And we saw it last year, unfortunately. Like, Adam Fox is lights out, regardless who he's playing with. But he's really lights out when he's playing with Ryan Lindgren. And when he wasn't with him, it looked a little different for a stretch. I don't know where it goes with him. I mean, you know, we've got Keandre, who's up now, RFA. But Braden Schneider, you talk about getting more over the next couple of years as far as opportunity. This kid's a stud, dude. I don't know what you guys think about him, but
I'll tell you what Avery thinks, Rupper. Avery was just talking smack about him last episode, saying he's not safe anymore in his position. So, you know, me and Johnny had to defend his honor a little bit.
No. I was saying that the Rangers, I felt like the Rangers lineup felt like it had a lot of security, and Chris Drury signing 10 guys now creates this effect where they need to play a lot better in order to stay in the lineup.
That's, they need to have that. Because you know, like, nothing's worse than when you have guys that are on teams where there's no one knocking at the door. You know what I mean? Like, you got to have somebody. You got to have someone. You got to get some competition for ice. Whether it's him or anybody else, like, if anything, I think he's providing some competition for guys maybe even playing above him in the lineup, and they will. Like, he could do a little bit of everything. We saw him score some goals last year. Every once in a while, he comes out of nowhere with like a huge hit, and he could drop the glove. Who did he tee off on a couple years ago? Was it Devils? Was it last year?
Somebody on the Devils. Yeah. He laid out Sharon Govich.
Sharon Govich laid him out.
Like, and I know Sharon Govich doesn't fight, but like, that was like a moment. I was like, well, okay, this kid could bring some heat. So I like him a lot.
Yeah, I think experience is really going to help him out. Like, I think he has all the intangibles. I think.
Oh, sure. Now you do. Last week you didn't.
Didn't say that.
The classic lawyer response over here.
No, I listen. I think he's got all the raw talent. I think he just needs more experience. That's it.
Yeah, he needs more reps, just like everybody else. And he'll be. They got a good one there.
They got to lock up Keandre. I think that's like first order of business, last order of business.
Yeah, he's a real deal too. Like, when he's at his best, and I think he's got another level too. Like, he comes through in big clutch moments, I feel like.
Scores too. Yeah.
With his skating ability, and he's what was it? I know some of the analytics this year with him, his stick just breaking up plays. I think he was like fourth in the league as far as like breaking up plays with his stick or stick checks and poke checks or whatever. He's got that range, and the dude could skate, man. I love when he gets up ice and he just decides like, oh, it's time to get back, and you just see him. Just it looks weird, like he's just making up so much ground, right? It's like a horse coming back. So it was good.
It's crazy. And Rupper, just to wrap it up with you, I got like a somewhat of a two-parter, but you know, I had to wait till the end to kiss your ass a little bit. Just our interaction at the Cup final was like such a cool, like, oh shit moment for me, like my first time really, like, you know, in the mix in the media scrum, and I just wanted to thank you for that. But you know, on top of that, you know, as a young player in the Stanley Cup final in your rookie year, like, what was your oh shit, you know, I'm in the NHL kind of moment? I mean, I'm sure it came before game 7. And then just to finish it up, I know you have all those jerseys behind you. I know there's a great story about how you got Lundqvist to sign a jersey, and I would love to tell that.
Yeah. Hey, first off, it was great finally meeting you. I feel like I knew you from social and stuff like that. You know, during the finals, I remember I saw you come by, and I think
I wore that loud ass jacket. You couldn't miss it.
You had a blue. Was it a blue jacket yet?
It's like, I don't even know. It's like teal. Like, it's loud.
So I said something. To Jameson Coyle. I'm like, dude, check out the jacket up there. And I didn't see your face. And he goes, oh, that's a Johnny Lazarus. And I'm like, oh, is it? I'm like, I want to say hi to him. That was like, that was like earlier,
right before going on the ice.
I saw you. And yeah, then I saw you again a little bit later, whatever. And then I saw you there. So just wanted to say hi and, you know, whatever. So it was cool meeting you there. But yeah, no, it's, you know, my first NHL moment, kind of like arriving in the NHL, I guess. You know, I remember there's kind of two. So my first NHL game was on my birthday. I got called up. My birthday is January 13th. I was playing in Albany. I think we had a game on the 12th in Albany. We finished the game. Coach calls me in and says, you're getting called up. You're called up. You're playing tomorrow night's game. So I went home, packed the bag, drove that night and got in around the Meadowlands there. You know, it was during Continental Airlines Arena at that time, and got in probably like 1 a.m. or something. And then I went to the rink, pregame skate. I was getting ready for the game. And, you know, the two things happened in that time. First was my first shift. Okay. I'm sitting there, and it was really cool feeling. And this kind of goes to what we were saying before, too. I don't know if these names mean what they mean to you, for you guys, but Turner Stevenson was my right winger. Mm-hmm. I was center. Jim McKenzie was my left winger. I was so insulated with toughness, and I didn't really fight then, but I was 6'5", 230, right? Like I was a big body. I finished my checks and stuff. And I remember those guys pulled me aside before the game started in the locker room. And they know that, like, you got to get noticed. Like, that, my job that night was enjoy it. I may never get another game again, but I want to get noticed, so I'm back for game 2. Like, I got to buy myself the next game. And that meant get noticed. If I score a goal, that's getting noticed. That should buy me another game. If not, I might have to do something stupid, like show that I'll do whatever it takes to stay here. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. And they pull me aside and they go, hey, kid, do whatever you want to do out there tonight. We got you. And I'm like, that was fucking cool. Because I'm like, these guys don't really know me. But they're like, you go and set them up. We'll knock them down. You know what I mean? So yeah, that's freeing, because like I was probably still go and do something and play physical. And then if I had answered, I'd probably get beat up, to be honest with you. If I ran into the wrong guy, these guys are like, do whatever you do. We'll handle the rest.
Toe drag at the blue line.
So my first shift, I jump over the boards. I could barely breathe. I feel like I'm going to pass out. My heart's going 100 miles an hour. I want to take like a 12-second shift. Like, I just want to get out, get the puck, dump it in, and come change like a quick one, right? Like, just get that first one underneath. And I remember I jump on the ice, and I'm watching a play, and I'm looking over my shoulder like this, and I'm getting ready to like forecheck, and I'm waiting for the guy to dump it in so I can kind of time it. And all of a sudden, I just remember just like I got an elbow right to the chin. Boom. And I was like out, like on the ice. And you guys remember Peter Worrell?
Yeah, yeah, Florida legend, yeah.
Yeah, Peter Worrell, like 6'7", 265 pounds, just skated by me. And that was the thing. With me being like 6'5", 230, anybody would look at me and be like, well, that's fresh meat to like beat up, you know, like or at least challenge. And he just went by me. The puck was on the other side of the ice and just elbowed me right in the chin, knocked me down. I remember I got up. And I'm like, oh no, man! Like I'm not gonna like I can't let him show me up like that. The puck's coming around the boards. I get up at center ice, and he's looking over his boards, feeling like the rim around the boards. And I just took like I felt like 30 strides,
yeah.
And I just
went definitely a charge
as I can. He just put a shoulder right in his chest, and I hit him with everything I had, and we both kind of like fell down like that. And I got up and I high stepped it so much on the back check just to get away from him so he didn't grab me and just beat me up. And that was kind of like, all right, man, we're in it now. You know what I mean? And then I think those guys, like, you know, they kind of like, you know, got in the way so he didn't beat me up. And then I can get comfortable. And then so that was the first kind of physical moment. And then as that game went on, I got Scott Niedermeyer shot the puck. I deflected it. It went in. They review it. It was high stick. My stick was up too high. So I'm like, oh, man, that would have been cool to score my first NHL game. And then probably like two shifts later, I get a pass from Jim McKenzie on the cycle. He gives me the puck on the like top of the circle on the wall. I grab it. I come walking off the wall. We're playing against Florida Panthers, and Luongo's in net. And it was just weird. Like, no one really came to me. So I just kind of walked across top of the circle, and I fired one. Beat Roberto Luongo upstairs and scored, and it counted. I'm like, holy shit, I scored my first game. Like, that's nuts. Next shift, come down on a two-on-one with Patty Elias. She slides one over, and I get a one-timer and score a second goal. So I could have had three goals in the game. And I'm like, oh, man, this is like – for me, I'm like, I bought myself a second game.
Your memory is insane, too, by the way, the fact that you remember.
Crazy.
Yeah. Robert, exactly. you were thinking you were about to be an 85-point player
a year. I'm like, easy league.
I'm like, figure it out, boys. Give me the puck.
Shots a game over here.
So the next day in practice, I came in. And the next day in practice, I remember or the media after the game said to Pat Burns, the coach, who was – he was like torts before torts kind of, you know. And he was hard on everybody. And the media was like – because our team in New Jersey didn't score many goals that year. And then, you know, this one game, I have two goals in that game. And they're like, well, why didn't this kid make the team out of camp? And, you know, if he can score like this. And Pat Burns goes, because he was terrible in camp. I didn't know. So, like, oh, this is a tough league, you know. How about, like, hey, congrats on this first game. Like, I was just like, okay, whatever. So I go to practice the next day. So my first real practice with the team, this is my other, like, the NHL's hard. I come down the wing, first shot in practice, I fire it over Marty's glove. So think about it. Like, I probably had three shots on goal the night before. Yeah. Two of them went in. I was first star of that game. Practice next day, I think the best goalie to ever play the game, Marty Brodeur, is in net. I'm not trying to roof it on him. I just shoot it. Like, dude, it could have rolled on its side. It could have been a fluke. I don't know. But I went upstairs on him, beat him glove side. I go in the corner, and I stop, and a puck hits me in the ass. Marty shoots a puck at me.
Warm-up drill.
Yeah, it was probably a warm-up drill. I probably shouldn't even have gone there. And he goes, it's not that easy, kid. And I go, what? And he goes, this league's not that easy, kid. And literally for the next 4 to 5 weeks, I shot the puck in his pads every shot. I was afraid to score in practice. Yeah. I just come and just lob him into his pads.
Low and slow. Pads.
And I'm like, you know, you got to respect the vets. And, you know, Marty was an awesome teammate, though. But that was like an eye-opening experience for me.
Yeah, that is unreal. Goalies aren't pretty cool with the warm-up high glove shot. That's for sure.
No, yeah. They're not. And what was the last thing you asked me?
You got to tell the Henrik story, the jersey.
Yeah, so I actually got this jersey, too. The Lemieux jersey, same story. My Lundqvist one, I don't have it out right now. So I was playing in Pittsburgh, and I'd see Mario from time to time. So I bought a Lemieux jersey. Super nice guy, humble, classy. I'd see him. We'd only see him once a month, like, you know, whatever, passing through. He wasn't really like around every second. And so I had this jersey in my stall, never got it signed. And one day he was in the training room. He's laying on the table. He's getting, you know, he had his bad back. So he's getting his back work done. So he's just laying on the table. He's just got a towel draped over his, you know, waist and his lower half. And so I go in, I'm like, hey, Mario, I'm like, I got your jersey in my stall. I'm meaning to get you to sign it. Like, when you're done here, do you mind taking a second to sign it? He goes, oh, yeah, it was super cool. He's like, yeah, no problem, Rupert. Just, why don't you just grab it now because I'll forget. I'm like, no, do your thing. You're getting treatment, whatever. He goes, no, go grab it. So I grab it. I come back, and he signs a jersey. And I'm like, I walk away. I'm like, dude, that's really weird. Like, Mario signed my jersey naked. Like, that's fucking I'm like, and I started thinking to myself, I'm like, this is one of a kind. Like, how many people have the jersey signed by Mario that, like, he was naked when he signed it? That's weird. I know. I got it. Whatever. So you fast forward, like, it's only 2 years later, 3 years later, I'm in New York. Almost the same story. I had to get two jerseys, or I got two jerseys. I needed to get Hanky to sign a jersey for a fundraiser I was donating a jersey to. So anytime I had to do that with, like, the star players, I always collect the jerseys from them anyway. So I'm like, all right, I'll just do it all one time. And I'm clear. This is for the fundraiser. This is for me. Okay. Yeah. And can you sign these jerseys? He's like, yeah, no problem. So this thing was in my stall for, like, weeks. And I just kept forgetting too. And I'd say something to Hanky, and he'd be like, yeah, just bring it by anytime. You know, it's like after practice. Yeah, bring it over. And I forget, and I leave, and I come back, and so I needed it like this day. So I grab the jerseys. I'm going home. I'm like, where's Hanky? I got to find Hanky. And I go in the equipment room, and they're like, he's in the shower. I literally just walk and shower in my street clothes. I have the bag and the jersey, and I go, Hanky, he's literally in the shower. He's got shampoo in his hair. He's washing his hair. And I go, Hanky, dude, I can't forget. I literally am going to sit outside and wait for you because I have to get this today because I have to send this out. Mm-hmm. And he goes, bring it to me right now, dude. We keep forgetting. I'm like, nah, finish up, you know, dry off, whatever. He's like, no, literally walks over. He's got shampoo on him. Like, comes over, he shakes his hand off, and he signs a jersey. And I was like, I got this done. I'm like, I've got this fucking collection of jerseys from dudes naked, like, super, like, that's weird as shit. But, like,
how many guys would kill for that?
Yeah. How much you think? Like, hey, Hanky's a good looking guy. We know it. You know how many ladies out there? How many men out there would pay a premium to get that jersey? So I got these two really unique jerseys in my collection. So I got to have
my collection depends. Honestly,
I mentioned something to Hanky about it. I'm like, dude, we gotta find some documentation that, like, admits that you were naked when you signed it. He probably doesn't remember, but anyway.
You're the naked jersey scalper.
Yeah.
I am. Maybe that's my new thing. That's my side gig. It's kind of weird, but we'll see. We'll see how lucrative that business is.
These guys are gonna kill me because I always have one last question.
Here we go again. Well,
it just came to my mind. I cannot ask. But, you know, obviously you won the Stanley Cup in 2003. I'm sure you brought it somewhere fun in Jersey, but if, you know, we were just in Vegas,
you brought it to back home to Ohio, right?
Well, I'm saying that night you win it. Okay. You win it on home ice. We saw the Golden Knights win it at home. They brought it to Omnia. If you're on the Rangers, hypothetically, in 2024 and you win the cup in New York, where are you taking it?
Oh my gosh. Does it really matter in New York where you take it?
I don't know. Like a club or like McSorley's, like where's that thing going? You know, like
McSorley's
is a legendary spot. The Rangers go there all the time.
I don't even know where you'd, I think it would be unbelievable. Honestly, this might be lame because, I mean, any place you take it, like a club or like a bar or restaurant, like it's going to be cool and it's going to be a good time. I think it would be sick. Just like, I know MSG's changed the way it looks outside a little bit, but like, what's that entrance? You know, when you come up, like the main entrance, like underneath, like the steps, like I would love for it to be just brought out for fans.
Yeah. And just steps are blocked now.
That was one of the coolest things I know when like Washington won and they just brought it out in the streets. Like I love seeing the players with it and management and families. Like that's great. But like, dude, the fans go bananas for that stuff. Like, can you imagine just, you know, I remember one of the days I had this breakfast spot, my day with the cup, and it was in Ohio. And this is not like a crazy story or anything. It's just, I had a breakfast spot. We were starting the day and this is my favorite place to go get breakfast. And I'm like, I want to bring it there and I want to have like my favorite breakfast from this place to kind of kick the day off. And I went into this place. No one knew. The manager of the place knew, but actually he didn't know. We made a reservation for 30 people, but he didn't know the Stanley Cup was coming in. And I went into the place, and there was this father and a son just having breakfast. And this kid apparently played hockey. And the dad came over, and he's just like, I just can't believe. And the guy was like, in tears. The kid was crying, dude. Yeah. And I was like, I'm like, yeah, dude, come over. Come check it out. And he took his pictures with it and whatever. I'm like, I love when the Cup is surprised. It surprises people. Coolest shit you'll ever see. So can you imagine being a Rangers fan at that game? Or yeah. You know, maybe you can't even get into the MSG to see that game. Bring it outside. Put it on the steps, dude. Like, let everybody. Like, what kind of pictures that would be? That would be incredible. Yeah.
I mean, 7th Ave fucking shuts down for a Knicks first round win. I can't imagine what it would do.
Yeah.
Exactly. The Rangers Stanley Cup.
Yeah. Totally, man. Totally.
That'd be sick. But yeah, Rupper, I mean, thank you so much for doing this. An hour 15. Like, that was unreal. You're the fucking man. So, awesome, dude. Yeah, we appreciate it.
No, appreciate having me on, and we'll chat down the road, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Thanks, Rupper.
Thanks a lot.
We really want to thank Rupper once again for coming on the show. Such an unreal time talking to him. And I can't believe we had him on for an hour and 15. We actually joked around with him that we were going to record for 3 hours before we started. And then
he was so down.
Yeah, he was. Well, at the end, not when we said that originally, but like, I think we could have kept going, honestly. It was awesome. Probably, so yeah. We'll definitely get him back on. I think as the season goes on, maybe have him like break down, you know, some stuff, you know, with the Rangers play and whatnot. Cause he does those great breakdown videos too on Twitter.
Yeah.
I did a great one with Matthew Tkachuk, but you guys got any final thoughts before we send it off?
First of all, I just loved how Rupper broke down like Revo, like and his career and like what he adds to a team, and it's not just about skill and that. And a lot of people forget that, so it was nice to hear like the inside look on like what a guy like Rupper, who was a fourth line guy most of his career, feels like in terms of his value to a team. So I love that, and we're gonna have more guests like Rupper on throughout the season telling their stories, and I think that's what's the best, you know, when they get a little bit personal and they tell their side of them actually playing on the ice. Like, you know, we don't really know that, so yeah. They can only really tell the good stories from that.
Yeah, 100%. And on top of that, I mean, he's just a great dude, and I think he also like broke down the Rangers current situation really well and gives Rangers fans a lot to be hopeful for. And like, he was very confident that this team can win a cup. Like, he just thinks, you know, there's a few tweaks that need to be made. And if Laviolette's the guy, he's the guy. So, you know, very, very good to hear, obviously, from someone who's so involved in the game today. So,
yeah, I mean, I got nothing else. So, Cody, if you just want to say LFGR, we can get out of here. And
all right, LFGR, baby.
Later, guys.